all across America and around the world. This is Veterans Radio.
This is Veterans Radio.
And now, your host for today's program, Dale Thronberry.
And good afternoon, and welcome to Veterans Radio. My name is Dale Thronberry, CW2 type, Vietnam, 1969. We're getting ready to pull pitch on a great program today. It's going to be very busy. But first of all, I want to let everybody know that Veterans Radio is dedicated to providing a voice to America's veterans. And today we're going to be providing a voice to veterans from Australia. So it's kind of cool, I think. I also want to say welcome to all my veteran brothers and sisters, and thank you for your service and welcome home. As I mentioned earlier, we're going to have a busy program. We're going to be talking about a Freedom Award that is going to be given out in the near future to employers. It's an Employer Freedom Award, and we're going to have a guest on in just a second to talk about that program. And then we're going to have the CEO of an organization down in Australia called Mates for Mates. And this is very similar to the buddy-to-buddy program we have here in the local area in Ann Arbor. And the Vets to Vets program, there's a number of those around the country, but I think this is going to be kind of fun to talk with Simon Sauer, who is going to be the CEO of Mates for Mates. And also we're going to have a member of the Mates for Mates on, and is a good friend of the Vietnam veterans in the local Ann Arbor area, and that's going to be Alan Woods. He is going to be on later on in the program talking about his experience with Mates for Mates and a little journey that he went on following a trail from World War II, and I think it's going to be interesting to hear that. I'm really excited to talk with Alan. I haven't talked to him in quite a while. And so right now we're going to get right into the program. Oh, yeah, I suppose I should remind you, if you'd like to have a question answered or you have a comment, you can give us a call here on Veterans Radio today. The local number is 734-822-1600. That's 734-822-1600. Or you can call us toll-free at 844-838-1600. That's 844-VET, V-E-T, 1600. All right, coming on the program right now is our first guest, and that is, where did he go? There he is, Lieutenant Colonel retired Melvin Bauman, and he represents the Michigan Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve. Colonel Bauman, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Dale. Thanks for having me on the show, and thank you for your service.
Thank you very much. You too. I was going to go in and read all of the things that you've done, but it would take up half my program for somebody who's been in the service for 40 years.
Well, yeah, considering I'm 35, that's hard to do, but yeah, 40 years.
That is amazing, considering I spent only, 3 years, 7 months, and 2 days, but who counted
right.
At that time? Well, Colonel, tell me all about this first of all, tell me about the Michigan Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve and what that is.
Okay, Employer Support of the Guard and Reserve is a Department of Defense agency nationwide, plus it's in Guam and Puerto Rico and so on. But anyway, it was started in 1972, and of course in 72 is when they eliminated the draft.
Right.
And they started ESGR because they felt the need DOD felt the need to establish a relationship with employers that would support Guard and Reserve soldiers when they're deployed or when they have to go do their military duty. Oftentimes, Guard and Reserve soldiers face challenges ranging from their deployments to going to schools to drill weekends, and when they return to their jobs, they have a little trouble with some employers that don't necessarily want to take them back. What ESGR does is create a relationship with those employers so that they support what the Guard and Reserve soldiers do.
Okay, and now that we know all about that, which is a great scenario, I can remember my dad coming home from World War II and his job had been replaced while he was gone. And this is a great idea. And now there's an award coming up for this. Can you tell us a little bit more about that? It's the Freedom Award?
Well, there is. Employers that are supportive, their soldiers can recognize them by various awards. Say again?
I'm sorry. That's okay. Go ahead.
Okay. But there are several awards that they can be nominated for depending on how much support they give their troops. However, the Freedom Award is the top Department of Defense award in recognizing supportive employers, and we're talking employers that go above and beyond. I mean, they go out and, you know, maybe they go out and do home repairs on the soldier's house while he's gone, if the family has a furnace that goes out or something, or they keep their insurance going, or they keep their pay going, or they do many things that they don't have to do.
Mm-hmm.
The soldiers can recognize that employer and put them in for this Freedom Award, and it's a big deal.
And do we have the are there any companies in Michigan that are up for this particular award right now? Hold on just a second here, folks, if you're listening to us.
Yeah, we had some bleed over there.
Yeah.
Dale, I didn't hear your question.
My question was, are there any companies from Michigan that have been nominated for this?
Well, right now we have about 14 nominations in at this time. Mm-hmm. The nomination period runs from 1 October to 31 December. So if we have soldiers out there, Guard and Reserve soldiers, or their family members that want to put an employer in for an award, they can certainly do that. And they can do that by going online at www.freedomaward.mil. Or they can go to www.esgr.mil, and in either place they can put them in for the Freedom Award.
I think this is a really amazing program. I'm really excited about this, and I strongly encourage any of our listeners, if your company is one of these that really participate in this, you know, employer support of the Guard and Reserve, and they haven't been nominated yet, and I'm sure that you're just looking for, I don't know, comments and so on and so forth that would make you want to choose these particular companies, right?
Yeah, absolutely. We have, since 2005, we've had nine Freedom Award recipients in Michigan, and we're talking some heavy hitters, Ford, Chrysler, GM, Conway Freight, AltaCorp, State mm-hmm. Police, Oakland County Sheriff, and Uniform Color over in Holland is a smaller company. But one of their employees was deployed, and he was over in the sandbox, and
mm-hmm.
and he sent back a message to his employers there that his unit needed special sunglasses or whatever, and so the company bought them for his whole unit and sent them over there.
Oh.
That's the kind of stuff we're talking about.
That is neat. That is very neat. I wish I'd known whoever it was that provided the flight gloves in Vietnam.
Yeah, could use those.
Yep. Well, Colonel, thank you very much for being on the program. I think this is a great, great program that's available for these employers out there. And again, if people want to recommend or nominate their company, how do they go about doing that?
Again, they go on www.freedomaward.mil, and they can nominate them right there.
Okay, I'm looking at the website right now, and there's a spot there where you just click on Nominate Employer and go from there.
Yep, that's right.
Okay, and when are these awards going to be announced?
Well, they announce them, they present the award in August, the latter part of August, and so sometime prior to that.
Okay, well, we'll just have to keep in touch, and when we find out, or when you find out who the winners are going to be, just shoot us an email, and we'll get you back
right
on and let everybody know who won.
I'll certainly be glad to do that.
And thank you very much, Colonel, and I want to thank Colonel Bauman for being on Veterans Radio, and have a happy Thanksgiving.
Yeah, thanks, Dale. You too.
All righty.
Yeah, bye-bye.
Thank you. And I'm guessing that we will be back in just a moment with we got Simon online. Oh, this is great. All right, things are going well. So we're going to be back, and we're going to be talking to the CEO of Mates for Mates. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back. We are back on Veterans Radio, and we were listening to just a brief amount of the Australian National Anthem. I don't think I'd heard that, except at the Olympics. We don't basically hear these. Joining me right now on the line is the CEO of Mates for Mates, and it's Simon Sauer. And Simon, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Thanks, Sal. Good to be on the show.
Thank you very much. We are talking with Simon. Where are you in Australia?
I'm in Brisbane, mate.
In Brisbane, okay. So tell me let me back this up. Tell me a little bit about what Mates for Mates is, first of all.
Mates for Mates is a not-for-profit operating here in Australia. We're predominantly in the state of Queensland, of which I'm centred in Brisbane. We've got an office here in Brisbane, an office also in Townsville, which is in North Queensland. And we then also have an office in Hobart, which is right down south in the southernmost state of Australia called Tasmania. And what we do is we provide support to wounded, injured, and ill members and former members of the Australian Defence Force. So we have a very wide remit. We don't target a particular service, a particular organisation within a service, or a particular campaign. So we have people on our books that have served in Afghanistan. We have people on our books that were injured as a result of their initial training when they first joined the military. So if you have served in Australia and you're wounded, injured, or ill, we provide help, predominantly in physical rehabilitation and psychological services.
Well, Simon, for our listeners here and around the world, does Australia have a system much like ours with a veterans administration or a government-run program for their veterans for health care?
It does. So Australia has a Veterans Affairs organisation which is good at looking after the individual, but sometimes there's a gap between the member leaving defence and getting their condition acknowledged by the system. Mm-hmm. Or also they may have left defence and it might be several years later when they finally realise they've got a problem. And it may be easier for them to come to an organisation like ours in the immediate term where they can come in, no questions asked, and get support straight away whilst they get the paperwork and everything put into place. The other thing that is subtly different is we provide support to the immediate family as well. So if we're talking about maybe a guy that served in East Timor back in 2000, 2001, he subsequently married, got a couple of children, and then the PTSD or some mental health issues start coming to the fore, we help the family understand how to cope so that they know not how to not press Dad's buttons as we're trying to help Dad, if that makes sense.
Right. Yeah, I know that sometimes getting into and through the system sometimes is what is most difficult.
Correct. And I mean, to be fair, the Australian system has had a lot of work in the last 10, 15 years, and they're doing a lot of work now to improve it. But at the end of the day, they are bureaucratic systems, and therefore there are rules and there are processes, and information has to be checked. So we are able to provide it a service. And we also, I mean, some of our people get support from our Veterans Affairs organisation and still get support from us because we're complementary.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it certainly sounds like. How long has Mates for Mates been around?
The organisation's been going just over 2.5 years, and I've been with the organisation about 6 months.
How many participants do you have currently?
I'll start the other side. I've said we've got the three centres. We've got 27 staff, of which 9 are part-time. And we're supporting right now just over 1,000 people on our books. Now, whilst that's a large number, not all those come in every day, and some of those live remote to the centre, so they get a different level of service. Mm-hmm. Some of those join, and we don't see again for various reasons. Some of that number also have arguably got a lot of support from us, maybe 2 or 3 times a week for some periods, and then they've got to a point in their life where they can go back and get a job and move on, so to speak, and therefore they see us less as well. So that whilst we have 1,000 on the books, there's probably only several hundred that are getting intense levels of support, and the rest are more ad hoc. It depends what the individual needs, too. It depends whether all they're missing is a bit of military camaraderie and they want to come in for a barbecue and catch up with like-minded people, or whether they've got a significant injury, be it psychological or physical, and they need the direct support.
Right. And I see that you have a lot of programs going right now to help out your veterans. Can you talk about a couple of those? I see you've got Equine, which is working with the horses.
Yeah, so I'll step back. The centres have a range of services operating out of each of the three centres. So we do physical rehabilitation, and that's everything from one-on-one programs for people that may have had, say, something like complex shoulder surgery or an amputation, mm-hmm. right through to small group training, because as we know, just that general fitness thing, a lot of ex-military people like to keep that routine. The other part is, as we know, that physical fitness helps the mental health side as well. So, again, within that physical health, physical fitness, things like yoga and some of the more, a little bit non-traditional, we dabble in those as well. When we then slide onto the psychological support, as I said, to the individual or to the immediate family, we also run programs such as parenting programs and even couples programs to help with the relationship either with the partner or with the children.
Okay.
Equine then slips in there because equine is a, whilst we see it as a major activity, it is a psychological first and foremost, and it's about using the horse as a, arguably as a mirror, for want of a better term. The horse can look at the human and see straight through them. So you and I put up a facade about what we want the world to see. The horse doesn't see that. It sees the person for what they really are. So it allows the people to develop trust, respect, responsibility, and just get back into their life that they may have been missing out on.
Yeah, we are starting to use a lot of that therapy around here. I was talking to some Vietnam veterans the other day, and it's one of their most effective and popular programs.
No, correct. We're essentially just about doubling our number of spots as we go into 2016, coming out of this year, because Equine has been so positive. And the other thing we've done this year is we've trialled what they called an Equine Couples Program, where they had husband and wife working with horses and allowed not only that individual self-reflection, but the relationship analysis as well. So that's been very good. Stepping on from those, though, we then have a large amount of stuff as far as the return to workspace is going. So it's everything from helping the individuals get resumes and referrals sorted out, a little bit of upskilling, coordinating with training organisations to give them additional skills, and then using work placement companies to try and find work, either part-time or full-time, depending on what an individual's capacity is. The other two areas we cover up on is what we refer to as the major challenges, and so that's things like the Kokoda. I know you're going to talk to Alan a bit more later, so I won't steal his thunder, but we do a series of major activities, trekking as Kokoda. We did sea kayaking as well. We've got a group actually going down to the state of Victoria over the last couple of days to paddle in a marathon sea kayak paddle called the Murray River Marathon. Early back in March, we had a group paddle from Tasmania across to Victoria to Melbourne, which is across Bass Strait, which is a fairly notorious piece of water. And the other thing we do is cycling. So we had a group go and participate with, there's a charity in the UK called Help for Heroes, and they facilitate a thing called the Big Battlefield Bike Ride in Europe. And we had people go and ride on that this year, and they'll go again, or people go again next year as well. The last area we then focus on through our three centres is that social engagement, and that's just little activities out of the centre. So we worked with one of the disability organisations and had a water skiing day or barbecues at the centre during the Tour de France. The guys came in here and had a Tour de France party and stayed up and watched the race and then went to bed late at night our time and got up and had a barbecue and went for a ride the next morning. So just social engagement, which is a big thing, allowing particularly people who had psychological issues, particularly PTSD, to get re-engaged.
Right. I think that's really important that it sounds like you're doing many of the same things that they're attempting to do around here, and that's providing activities for the veterans where they can feel safe and where there's an opportunity for them to tell their stories if they want to, or they can hear other people's stories. We're talking with Simon Sauer, who's the CEO of an organization in Australia, in Brisbane. It's called Mates for Mates. And I think this sounds really, really a cool organization. And maybe for our audience, again, it's how many veterans are there in Australia? Do you have any idea total from all the different conflicts that you've supported?
If you went that way, it'd be massive. I mean, not by your states, but certainly if you think about our Department of Veterans Affairs currently supports over 300,000 people. Now, that's from World War II forward, and some of that's the spouses of those that were killed as well. Our Defence Force now, though, is relatively small compared to yours, so we only have 50,000 people in the Australian Defence Force in total. Mm-hmm. But we've then had 3,000 or 4,000 people deployed every year for the last 15 years. So proportionately, whilst we're a lot smaller population than you guys, I guess we've got a similar probably percentage of the population that have been deployed. I myself was ex-Air Force, so I served over in the airbase in Tarankot in Afghanistan with a bunch of Americans in the second half of 2013.
Right. What are your goals? Are you hoping to expand across Australia, let's put it that way, to the whole country?
We will, but not in the next 6 to 8 months. The goal for the sort of immediate future is about just consolidation of services. I mentioned earlier that we've got over 1,000 people on the books, mm-hmm. but we're only 2.5 years old. In June 2014, we only had 200. By June this year, we had 800. Now it's 1,000. We've had a huge growth in expectation of what we can do. And so my priority in my first sort of 6 months in the job has been to recruit an extra 3 or 4 staff as we grow our actual capacity. But we've got to get our processes and procedures up to speed, or else we just will explode ourselves. So we've got to make sure we can deliver what we can say we can deliver, which we are, but we've just got to reinforce that as we go forward. Australia being such a large country, we've only got the 3 centres, as I said, but and there's a fair percentage of people that live within maybe a 2-hour drive radius of those centres.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a lot of people that don't. And if I just look at the state of Queensland alone, I've got people that live 4 and 5 hours out west, and there might not be many of them, but they still need and should be able to get help when they want it.
Right.
So we've got to sort out how we're going to do what we call remote delivery of services, and as we get that model sorted in the next 6 months, that will allow us to then look at, well, where else around Australia, because we will go interstate, will we open additional centres. But we've got to make sure we do this in a controlled manner so that we can actually help the people that need help. At the end of the day, this is all about providing help to someone that needs help, and that's the thing that my staff need to keep in the front of their mind in everything we do.
Are there a lot of women in the Australian military, or are there a lot of women that you're helping out?
It's about 15% at the moment. So about 85% male, 15% female, and that we see similar numbers in our books.
Mm-hmm. Is there a way that we could help out? Is there something that the Americans can do, or even just our audience can do? Can we donate funds? Or
certainly, if people would like to donate, all donations are greatly appreciated. And I think you mentioned our website before, but that's just simply www.matesformates.org, and the 4 is the number rather than the word. And there's a link on there for people if they would like to donate. But the biggest thing for us, I mean, obviously financial support is very, very important, but for us it's about the breaking down the stigma, particularly associated with mental health conditions. Mm-hmm. And it's not just for the military veterans. First responders suffer the same thing. Victims of domestic violence and abuse suffer the same thing, particularly when you think about PTSD or bad depression and significant anxiety. People don't ask for help, and people don't necessarily think that that's what someone's problem might be. The analogy we use is if you see someone with a cut leg walking on the street, generally people will stop and help.
Right.
But they don't necessarily think about that from a mental health point of view. And so we've got to, as an organisation, as a nation, I think we've got to really break that down. I dare say that America's in the same boat.
Yeah, that is true. I encourage our listeners, whoever is listening to this program today, is to go to their website, matesformates4.org. They've got all kinds of explanations of what they're doing and some of the adventures that they're going on. And we're going to be talking with someone who just did the Kokoda trek, which it sounds like something. I don't know if I could ever do that myself, and I'm anxious to talk to Alan about that. But you can. You can support our mates. We can help out with funding, and I'm sure that there are some people in our listening audience that may be able to offer some suggestions that might be able to help out. We do a lot of the things that you are doing here in America. We take a lot of veterans are going fishing and hunting, and it's just getting them out and getting them with other veterans so that they can feel comfortable and can relax a little bit. And I think that's really what is necessary, because sometimes veterans seem to get themselves so isolated that they don't realize that they're in this thing together with a number of other men and women.
Now, that's exactly right, Dale. The biggest thing we have is getting someone to come in the front door.
Mm-hmm.
We hear horror stories of people sitting on the couch at home watching daytime television, not wanting to engage. And then we do have the odd case of you get someone who arrives at the centre, they pull into our car park, and it takes them 2 hours to get the courage to get out of the car and walk in the front door. Mm-hmm. So that reception when they come in the front door is critical. It's got to be engaging. It's got to be friendly. It's got to be no BS. And then we've got to work with those people and just let them settle in their own time. You can't push them. You've got to just let them engage on their terms.
Right. Absolutely. And I think it always helps when you've got other veterans around, because veterans seem to feel safer with other veterans.
Yeah, exactly right. I think the biggest way we grow is actually word of mouth rather than any advertising. People are aware of us through a great brand recognition, but that doesn't mean they trust you. They only trust you through word of mouth.
That's right. Well, we've been talking with Simon Sauer, the CEO of Mates for Mates down in Australia, and I encourage all of our listeners to check out their website, matesformates.org, at the number 4, and see what you can do. And I think maybe it sounds like they've got some ideas that we may want to use as well. So I thank you very much for being on Veterans Radio, Simon. I look forward to talking to you again.
Thanks, Dale.
Okay. We're going to be taking a break at the news, and we'll be back with Alan Woods, who's going to be talking about a Mates for Mates journey that he went on. So stay tuned. We'll be right back after the news and a few messages. See you on the other side.
Once a jolly swagman can buy a billabong under the shade of a coolabah tree, and he sang as he watched and waited till his billy boiled. You come a waltzing Matilda with me. Waltzing Matilda, waltzing Matilda, you'll come a waltzing Matilda with me. And he sang as he watched.
That's the best I could do for Australian music, because I don't know that much. But joining me on the line right now is Alan Woods. And Al was a dog tracker in Vietnam, similar to the time period that I was there, 68, 69, in an area called Long Thon, I believe. And Alan, welcome to Veterans Radio.
Good afternoon, Dale. It's a Monday morning down here or down under. But I was on some years ago, in the days when Gary was the compere, and I did a program about the Aussies in Vietnam. I don't know whether you remember that.
I do remember that because I'm...
some years ago.
Yeah, it was. I'll have to go back and look in our archives to make sure I can get a copy of it to you, and also to make sure that it's in the archives. In fact, I just sent you an email, not to worry about what we're talking about, but with a little picture of one of the helicopters from Long Thon. One of your helicopters, not ours.
Oh, okay. Yeah, right. Good. Yeah. As I mentioned to you previously, and as Simon was saying, there is a branch of Mates for Mates opened about a year ago down here in Hobart. I live about half hour's drive out of Hobart, and I thought, yeah, I'll go along to that. My wife was trying to push me out to get me involved in something or other. As Simon was saying, some of the guys just sit around inside, and they want to find people with who speak the same language as they do, even though I've been out probably 46, 47 years since I finished my term. But I joined them late last year, and then about I think it was May this year, they threw out an offer to me with one of their healing programs to walk the Kokoda Trail or Kokoda Track, whichever you want to call it, at no cost, no monetary cost to me, I should say. Mm-hmm. Except if we wish to pay about $600 for a personal porter, we could do that. I think it was probably a very, very, very wise option on my part. I'm closing. Well, I've just turned 69 now, and the thought of carrying something like about 40 or 50 pound over a week trek on the back, it was tough enough without it. Put it that way.
Right. Well, we're talking with Alan Wood here, who's a member of Mates for Mates, and this is the reason that he was the one that turned me on to this organization. And You mentioned that you had just joined it, and where you live in Australia. Tell them how the next stop south is what?
The next stop south? Well, if you go from here, you've got a few little bobbing up, little islands popping up out of the sea, uninhabited, and then you start striking the ice. There's an Antarctic center here in Hobart, which services the icebreakers and some of the flights that do supplies, et cetera, to get down to down to the South Pole.
Okay. Well, what Simon was talking about with Mates for Mates, and which is similar to programs around here, is that they have these activities that veterans can go on to just to go.
Yeah. They're healing programs.
Right.
They have yachting races. They have treks. They have you name it. As you said, the equine programs. They've got quite a number of programs running, and they're building them all the time. It's early days, really, only after a couple of years or so.
Right.
But the Kokoda trip. When they threw it at me, I thought, well, I'm damned if I say no, and I'm damned if I say yes.
Tell me why is this place well known? We have to remember, most of our audience doesn't know what Kokoda is. And a matter of fact, if you have a question for Al, you can give us a call here on the air at 734-822-1600. And, or you can, let us know what's going on. So, again, you can give us that call at 734-822-1600. So tell me what Kokoda is.
Well, actually, the word, in case you're not aware of it, the word Kokoda in the local tribal dialect in New Guinea is, the translation is a place of skulls.
Oh, all right.
Which conjures up all sorts of things straight away. You think, whoa. So it runs from pretty much from the north of the island to the south of the island, finishes close to the capital of Port Moresby, and it runs right across the Owen Stanley Ranges, and they rise. I'm not quite sure Mount Bellamy how many thousand feet she is up there, but. She's quite a height. She runs the track itself that we did was about 60 miles up and over and down and up and over and down and up and over and down. At the bottom of each one, you've got either pretty tricky bridges to cross, native built log bridges, or you're thigh deep getting across the streams and rivers and whatever. And she's leech infested. She's usually it's the worst country in the world for malarial born mosquitoes, etc. So it's a lot of fun.
It sounds like it. So were you taking your malaria pills during this week?
Yeah. I had to take those. I had to take them for a month after I came home as well, just to be on the precautionary side. But, as I say, I wasn't really sure whether I should be doing this at this age, but I thought, well, it's an iconic thing down under. Just to give you a bit of a rundown on what Kokoda was all about, Dale, back in mid-1942, there were something like about 6,000 Imperial Japanese Army and Marines landed on the north coast of New Guinea. They pushed inland with the object of going over the top of the mountains and capturing the capital on the south coast of Port Moresby, and then using that as a base for air and sea operations around the Southwest Pacific. And when they landed, there was only one single Australian militia battalion in the area, and they were called the 39th Battalion, or commonly referred to when the Japanese landed as the Chocos, or the Chocolate Soldiers, because it was referred that they'd melt under the heat of battle.
Oh, I guess they didn't.
So,
They didn't, though, right?
Yeah, well, they were pretty iconic, those guys. They dug their heels in and you hold till relieved, I guess. And there are other battalions of regulars sent up pretty quickly to join them. And it was a war of attrition across the mountains. The 39th Battalion, I've recently got to know quite well an old guy down here. He's 95. He's the last survivor in this state of the chocolate soldiers of the 39th Battalion, old Affle. 39, he ended up copping some shrapnel, grenade shrapnel wounds in the thigh and was evac'd out. And he's a nice old guy, likes his red wine, and, you know.
Why not? At 95, he should.
Yeah, well, yeah, some people say you shouldn't drink so much wine, it might injure your health, but he says, hey, at 95.
That's true. That's true.
Yeah.
What else are you going to do, right?
But anyway, the Japanese went over the top, and they were slowed down by the Australian forces. They got as close to Port Moresby as to see the nightlight glow of the Moresby, but because their supply lines were so stretched that they couldn't go much further, and being slowed down with mountain guns. They received the order to, because there was no word in the Japanese language at that stage for retreat, they were ordered to about face and advance to the rear.
I never knew that. See what you learn on Veterans Radio? There's something that's important. There was no word in Japanese for retreat.
So the war of attrition continued on. And then you guys came in to help out as well. I was looking it up a couple of days ago. You're probably not aware that during that campaign, your guys lost something like about 11,000 casualties.
Wow.
That was, majority of it was sickness, illness, like malaria and dengue fever, you name it. But they also lost 3,000 or 4,000 killed and wounded. So it was a bit like the what you see in the scenes from the Guadalcanal campaign, etc. So they lost quite a lot as well. But I don't know whether it's as well known in the U.S. That you know so many guys fought in New Guinea.
Well, I wasn't aware of that many fights down there.
Yeah.
I know we have talked about that. In fact, we're gonna hold on just a second. Now we're gonna be taking a break here, and I'm gonna come out of it with the New Guinea. I think it's their national anthem. I hope it is anyway. So you said you listened to the PNG song, and I'm going PNG. What is that? But
Papua New Guinea.
There we go. Anyway, so stay tuned, folks. When we come back out of this next quick break, and we'll be back with Alan Woods talking about his walkabout in Australia. You're listening to Veterans Radio. We'll be right back. We're back on Veterans Radio, and that was the national anthem of the PNG. How about that?
Dale, I thought I'd mention to you when I joined this group going over on this. They have probably a couple of trips per year, Mates for Mates organizing this. And as I say, it's paid for by donations from corporate and individuals. To send us up to these sorts of joyrides. But I joined a party of 15 on this particular trip in August, and that included two partners, a couple of the vets on it who probably went up there to look after them. But they were all war-damaged vets, as I would call them, all the guys. I was the only Vietnam vet in the trip. In the party, and I was probably the oldest by about 9 years. Our group leader on the trip, Glenn Azar, he's ex-military as well, and he told us on this particular trip that this was his 50th 5-0 crossing of the Kokoda. And I think that confirms that he's a bit mad too.
just for doing that.
Yeah, exactly.
I think so. So tell me how did you prepare for this 60-mile journey up and down?
Well, I mean, a lot of people have told me that it's a lot of there's a lot of mental attitude as well as physical. I mean, physical has a big part in it, obviously, but I think it's a lot of trekking on as much as you can do with walking with packs and the like, and you know, just slowly, steadily increasing the pack weight that you're carrying around the you know, on walks and things around the area. I think down here, and there's plenty of mountains around our way anyway, down this end of the world. But speaking of the packs and things, I was adamant that I wanted to unearth my old Vietnam War webbing and carry that. So, yeah.
How'd that work?
Not bad, actually. I pulled it out with the back, the small backpack and the braces and the two bottles and the like. It worked okay, I found, except that I ripped, there was a hook on it at one stage, ripped a lump out of my arm, and that, the bugs kept coming there for a drink, while it was dripping blood, but at least I could say I shed a bit of blood on Kokoda as well.
That is true. I'm sure that's
right. But, I also took along a trekking pole, which I made a wooden trekking pole. It was about 4 foot long, but what I found was very interesting up there was that a lot of the time on the walk, I was carrying it in two, this is about a 4 foot long pole, in two hands, carrying it like a rifle, and at times looking from side to side into the jungle.
I was going to ask you to describe this up there. We got the up and down the mountains and stuff. Is it jungle like?
Oh yeah, big time.
Oh, I can
big
only
time.
Imagine walking through that. You just kind of went right back to where you were
well,
40 years ago.
You get flashes. And you know, it was a little bit disconcerting at times there doing this, just to see the jungle. And I found I was quite often looking for ambush sites, which after 40 odd years is rather odd. But I thought, well, yeah, right. But I would say it was the trip itself was probably the toughest ever physical challenge I have ever faced, and that includes going back to Vietnam. But then again, I was only 21, 22 then.
Right. Yeah, there is a slight difference there. Yeah, well, we're 69 with a 21-year-old brain. That's the problem. We think we can do this stuff.
Some people probably thought I was, absolutely mad. I had a lot of people, a number of people anyway, said, oh, I couldn't do it. I wouldn't do it. But each one that did say that to me strengthened my resolve to stay the course on it.
Absolutely. So tell me about your typical day, Alan.
The other thing, just before I go on to that, I had somebody say to me, oh, I couldn't finish it if I started it. Well, you had no choice, Dale. I mean, what do? You get medevaced out or carried out. I've always said that even though I've been out of the Army for so many years, the Army never left me.
Mm-hmm. That's
just
true.
Endurance.
It never does. I mean, I think one of the things that's instilled in you is the idea, as you mentioned, of the endurance and that you think you can do it.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So I'll do it.
Yeah. You hit it right on the head there with the endurance side of it. But the usual day, Dale, started about under the stars about 5 a.m. when you'd be roused to get up, and you're on the trail by about 6, and you'd have about a 9 or 10-hour day ahead of you. That's crossing bridges and rushing streams and wading through rivers and tree roots by the absolute million. So every step you have to watch where you're calculating and walking. The mud, the hours spent going up, going down. It was just heartbreaking, really. Heartbreak Ridge, you might say.
Yeah, but I'm sure that the other people on the trek with you must have appreciated your effort.
Yeah, well, I found on occasion, because I usually ended up being tailing Charlie on these things. I was a bit slower than some of the other younger guys, but when we'd reach a ridge top, they're all lounging around taking a breather, and I'd finally get up there and probably take me a couple of minutes to even sit down. I'd usually get a bit of applause and well done, Al, and all this. They ended up calling me, Dale, they ended up calling me 50 Cal Al. I'm not sure why.
50 Cal Al. So what did you find, in addition to your walking through the jungles and so forth, what did you find up there on this journey?
Well, we did find some, from time to time, we passed some overgrown gun pits or foxholes left over from 70 years ago. We also were shown an arms cache which had been dug up, and that was a number of heaps of Mills grenades, all rusting. I went to pick one up, and one of the, I don't know why, but some of the guys stepped back a few paces.
Yeah, well, you never know when they're live, right?
Well, I said, they're fairly heavy, aren't they? I said, I might take a couple in my backpack, you know.
Well, why not?
But, and quite a lot of mortar bombs, rusting magazines from weapons, whatever. And we were told there's probably hundreds of these caches still unfound around the jungles. So, it's quite sobering to find all this sort of thing still lying around so many years, so many years later.
I want to make sure before we run out of time that you tell me each evening after you had your communal meal that
we'd usually get up and they'd nominate three guys to and the girls, the women as well, the spouses, but we'd get up and give our story, and quite often there's three or four of them broke down during that talk to they couldn't go on.
Mm-hmm. Were you just asked to talk about your...
It was a group therapy, Dale. Mm-hmm. People would, no one was recriminating. They get plenty of hugs and soft words. We knew where they were coming from.
Well, I think that's what we were talking about earlier when we were talking to Simon about Mates for Mates, that veterans can open up with other veterans. And say things that they wouldn't say to ordinary people, but the regular folks who hadn't been through those types of experiences. We got about 3 minutes to go. Tell me a little bit about your Jameson's Irish Bar.
Well, the Irish Bar, we got to one little place called the Fogey along the way, which they had quite a pitched battle back in 42 at, and I had carried a small bottle of Irish whiskey, Jameson's Irish whiskey, along, but officially alcohol is not allowed, but I collapsed when we got to there, and the tents had been put up by our porters, and I sat down on this little wooden bar, and I pulled this out, and I called out to one of the guys, and I just waved it in the air a bit. Suddenly I was the most popular man in the group, and there were about four others all came over for a bit of a swig. So it was only a swig, but it was a lift, at the end of a long, long and arduous day.
I can only imagine. So,
big time.
Yeah. Would you do it again?
Not for a while. Maybe when I'm about 90, I might try it again. Yeah.
Okay.
But the one quick one I want to mention to you, Dale, is the I think the guy that got me through it was he was killed back in 42, John Metz, and he in a firefight had his ankle smashed by a bullet. He was he couldn't walk, obviously, and in great pain. He crawled for 3 weeks. A 24-year-old guy crawled for 3 weeks through the jungle to get back to his lines. Eventually, he couldn't make it, so they left a medic behind with him, and the others went on ahead to bring up the rescue party to get him. When they arrived several weeks later, they found they'd been discovered by the Japanese and executed.
Oh.
And I thought, well, if this guy can crawl for 3 weeks mm-hmm. on his hands and knees, I can walk it.
I can understand that the motivation was there.
Oh yeah, big time.
And I think that they Well, this sounds like it was a great adventure, Alan, and I want to thank you very much for sharing it with us here on Veterans Radio again. And I encourage our audience to go to the Mates for Mates website. It's matesformates.org to find out more about this great organization, because there are so many people, military and civilians, that want to help veterans, and this seems like a good way to do it, don't you?
I do. Most definitely do. Certainly. Yeah, and I thank Simon for coming on and giving his bit of a rundown on it too. And I don't think he mentioned. I think he's ex Air Force himself.
Okay, that's. I figured he had to be ex military.
So
anyway.
He's been there.
I think so. Thank you very much, Alan. Alan Wood from Australia here on Veterans Radio, and we'll be talking to you again soon. Thanks again.
Will do. Okay. Thanks, Dale. Bye bye.
Bye bye. All right, and so we're coming up to the end of another program. Bob Gould will be the host next week, but right now I want to say from all of us here at Veterans Radio, have a very happy Thanksgiving, and don't forget all of our men and women who are serving around the world who won't be home this holiday season. Always remember, never forget. Until next week, you are dismissed. We'll be right back.